studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, and this morning, Mary Beth Maziarz and I speak with orthopedic surgeon Dr. Jocelyn Wittstein, who shares a holistic approach to preventing and treating osteoporosis and arthritis. It's never too early to learn how to avoid these things that none of us like as we age. Then former pro baseball player Jim Murphy has helped other professional athletes and people in general find their inner excellence. And he joins us to share how we all can look for and find the inner excellence within ourselves. All that coming up this hour on The Mountain Life. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. One in four adults has some form of arthritis, and osteoporosis-related fractures affect one in two women over 50. Yet for all the noise online, very few resources bring together the full picture of how to prevent and treat these conditions through everyday choices. That's where our next guest enters.
Dr. Jocelyn Wittstein is a board-certified orthopedic surgeon and associate professor of orthopedic surgery at Duke University School of Medicine. She, along with longtime friend, colleague, and dietitian Sydney Nitzkorski, have co-written a new book. It's The Complete Bone and Joint Health Plan. It offers a holistic, practical plan for joint and bone health from a trusted medical perspective, just in time for this month's Arthritis and Osteoporosis Awareness Month. Dr. Jocelyn, welcome to The Mountain Life. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with this. Where and when does arthritis, osteopenia, osteoporosis start? When does it begin in our bodies?
Certainly, there is an individual aspect to this. There are probably some genetics. When we think about, you know, risk of arthritis and osteoporosis, there's not a specific gene per se, like, you know, that makes you more likely to get this at an earlier age. But I certainly have patients who tell me, like, everyone in my family has bad knees, and my dad had his knees replaced before he was 50. Or, you know, my mom had osteoporosis. And we know that osteoporosis in and of itself, if you have a family history, is a risk factor for which you should, you know, which should make you be screened earlier than others. But in general, the risk of both of these things starts to really go up after the age of 50, especially for women more so than men.
And is it a given that we will all get arthritis at some point? I mean, I did find it kind of interesting that you include arthritis in here. And then that brings men into the conversation, of course. But will we all have it to some degree?
You know, some of us will escape it. But statistically speaking, 20% of adults do experience osteoarthritis. And osteoporosis is much more common. You know, one in three women will sustain an osteoporosis-related fracture in their lifetime. It's much less common in men. But I would say, you know, if we live long enough, if you get to be over the age of 50, you're probably more likely to have osteoporosis than arthritis, but they're both extremely common. The older you are, the more your parts wear out.
For sure, as we're all discovering. What is it that actually causes arthritis?
Well, there are various types of arthritis. The most common form we think about is wear and tear, so osteoarthritis, which is a combination of, you know, just use over time, mechanical overload of our joints. And some of us are built worse than others. You know, perhaps you're very bow-legged or very knock-kneed. So there's a weird mechanical loading where part of your knee takes more of the brunt of the load every day than others. But, you know, it is kind of an aging process of the joint. And we've always thought of it as just wear and tear. But basic science studies, some of which I've participated in, you know, now show us there's also an inflammatory component, even to the wear and tear type of arthritis. And then you have the other end of the spectrum, which is, of course, rheumatoid conditions, which are autoimmune and highly inflammatory conditions. And they're not really driven by the wear and tear. That's just, you know, all about the inflammation.
And are the strategies that you talk about in your new book, The Complete Bone and Joint Health Plan, are those helpful for both types of arthritis?
Yes, for sure. I always want to emphasize that if you are someone that has an autoimmune mediated, you know, inflammatory type of arthritis, something like rheumatoid arthritis, It's hard to, you know, we can't cure that with something like an anti-inflammatory diet. And the modern day medications, which prevent your body from attacking the joint surfaces in your body, are amazing. They have side effects, of course. So for someone that has a truly inflammatory type of arthritis that can be almost halted by these medications called disease modifying, you know, medications for rheumatoid arthritis, it will help, but it's not the cure for rheumatoid arthritis. On the other hand, if you have osteoarthritis, yes, you have some level of inflammation in your joints, and an anti-inflammatory diet will help that. But nothing reverses arthritis. If you have a bit of arthritis, the goal is to slow progression of it and manage or reduce the symptoms that you have, basically.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Dr. Jocelyn Wittstein. She has co-written a book along with her dietitian friend, Sydney Nitzkorski, who has lots of acronyms after her name. So she's a very accomplished dietitian. And they've come together to write this book, The Complete Bone and Joint Health Plan, Help Prevent and Treat Osteoporosis and Arthritis. Jocelyn, I feel like this is a book for everyone, because I think what happens is it's not until we get into our 40s or 50s that you know, we start talking about bone density and maybe getting our first scan. And I feel like we probably should be talking about it way earlier.
For sure. Yes, you know, we think of osteoporosis as something that just affects older women. And I agree with you. The Complete Bone and Joint Health Plan is a book for everyone. You could glean advice from this if you're younger than 40, you know, how to optimize your peak bone density even before the age of 30. If you're a man, you can get, you know, useful information out of this book. If you're a menopausal woman, there's information in it specific to you. But when we think about bone density, yes, it does peak at the age of 30. And if you haven't thought about your bone density before the age of 30, don't worry. There are things you can do after the age of 30 that we outline in this book. To help you hold on to the bone density you have. There are ways to gain a little. But yeah, you know, we start losing bone density at the age of 30, and then women rapidly lose it after menopause. So we need to think about it before the recommended age of screening for osteoporosis, DEXA scan. The recommended age is 65 in women, and that is really too late, because you're going to start to see 2% bone loss per year at menopause, which is on average age 52.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Okay, so there are kind of three parts of the way you're approaching the book and looking at this. You know, one is education. Two is this whole concept of an anti-inflammatory diet. And three is, of course, exercise, which, you know, it's pretty simple, as we learned. It's a panacea, right? Exercise,
yeah,
to everything,
yes.
You know, from mental health,
everything.
Physical health. So, you know, what do you find with your patients that you talk to about this sort of thing? What's the big thing that we don't know, that we don't realize, that we need to be educated on?
Well, when I think about what patients ask me most commonly, I mean, I get these three questions all the time at the end of a visit. You know, we've talked about this complex, whatever, counseling of risk benefits and alternatives for their rotator cuff repair or something. And the questions they ask me are, what should I eat? What exercise should I do? And what supplements should I take? And, you know, those aren't things that we usually talk about necessarily in a doctor's visit, but it's kind of in the background of, you know, what everyone's thinking. They're trying to be proactive and preventative. And we wanted to have all that information in this book, like as a resource for people. You know, how do you combine the needs of your bones and your joints in your diet, like an anti-inflammatory diet and a bone health diet? What exercises help maintain or increase your bone density, but at the same time, perhaps, like, how do you manage joint pain if you're trying to do the exercises that increase your bone density? And then, you know, just the sheer number of questions that are so common over and over and over again. Sydney and I just thought to ourselves, we should just put this all in one place for people because they come up all the time.
And that's great, because that'll save everybody a few dollars, because buying your wonderful book is probably much more affordable than having multiple doctor's appointments that are counted as extended.
Or making the most of your doctor's appointment.
Exactly.
So you come into it really educated. I think that's where the Complete Bone and Joint Health Plan can help people the most, is when you go to the doctor, you're going to be really informed and you know what questions to ask.
That's excellent. Well, let's start with supplements. What kind of micronutrients are people deficient in? And what do you recommend the most that we check out when we're trying to keep our bones and joints healthy?
So sure. Vitamin D is by far the most common deficiency we see. And the food sources you might find this in are, you know, fatty fish, something like salmon, eggs, you know, but it's also mushrooms are a source. A lot of people don't know that, but, and you know, the other reason why people may be deficient is everyone is wearing sunscreen all the time because they don't want skin cancer. So it's just a common deficiency for people to have. So I actually think it's a great idea to supplement vitamin D within a safe range. And we know that supplements around 2,000 international units per day also have been shown to reduce joint pain. So, you know, that's kind of a win-win if you can reduce joint pain and also support your bone health with something that's commonly deficient. I think that's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, for sure. And you had mentioned that postmenopausal women have the strongest loss in bone density. What is it about hormonal changes that affect bone density? And can the supplements of that help?
Yeah, women are unfortunately exposed to a rapid change in hormone levels with menopause, and this makes them much more at risk for osteoporosis than men. So as estrogen levels decline, bone density declines because estrogen plays a very specific role in bone density. It actually makes the cells that break down bone not live as long. So when those cells live longer, they break down more bones. We're breaking down more bone, and that makes us build less bone. So thus you see this more rapid decline, 2% per year loss of bone density, as opposed to the more typical 1%. As this accelerates, then we're more at risk for osteoporotic fractures.
I wanted to ask you, because we have done some recent interviews about hormone replacement therapy, and I know that the jury's still out to a certain degree on hormone replacement therapy about the risks versus benefits. So when it comes to estrogen, you know, that's what they talk about, is that it will really help your bone density and joint health. Do you have a thought on that that you could offer us?
Absolutely. You know, many of the risks associated with hormone therapy came from the earliest versions of the Women's Health Initiative, which unfortunately included many women who were more than a decade out from menopause. And when they initiated hormone therapy, there were some concern for risk, things like heart attacks, cancer, strokes. And when the data was reanalyzed and you looked at women who were started on menopausal hormone therapy within a decade of onset of menopause, these risks were not present. And if you consider things as a balance of risk and benefits, there is overwhelming benefit for women for use of menopausal hormone therapy if you don't have contraindications like a known genetic clotting disorder or something. We see significant decrease in risk of osteoporotic fractures, a 30% reduction in risk of hip fractures. We know that women maintain more lean muscle mass in the presence of estrogen. There is less inflammation, less joint pain. There is evidence that this may additionally help with cognition. We know that it improves lipid panels to have estrogen on board. Also, your glucose control is better in the presence of estrogen. Women see worsening hemoglobin A1C levels. They gradually creep up in the absence of estrogen. So I am strongly in favor of menopausal hormone therapy. Of course, it's an individual decision, and you should always speak to your doctor, because we all have different family and personal medical histories that may or may not contradict the use of this in an individual.
And then if you didn't bother to get around to it, you know, within 10 years following menopause, because I know a lot of people who say, I've done nothing and I've thought about it, but I don't know. And there are risks. And then suddenly 10 years passes. So should those people just forget about it?
I think this is a good conversation to have with your women's health doctor, because depending on your family history or your history, you know, that is a shared decision making that you could make. If you're really struggling, you know, with your bone density, or you don't tolerate other medications like bisphosphonates for some reason, it may be something you decide to do as a shared decision making process. That is a good conversation to have. I wouldn't tell people to just skip that conversation with their doctor. I think it's a reasonable thing.
Okay, great. A bit ago, you talked about the DEXA scan, the bone density scan. I'm wondering, when do you recommend a DEXA scan? Should we have a baseline when, I don't think insurance would cover it if we did it at age 30 or 35. And then do we have a follow-up one when we're older?
Unfortunately, many insurance companies don't cover them even, before the age of 65, unless you're able to justify a lot of risk factors. I think mid-40s is reasonable, definitely by 50. When you're 50, you're kind of at a fork in a road. You're probably perimenopausal or about to experience menopause, average age 52. And I think if you had the information at hand, if you knew what your bone density was, and you were trying to decide whether or not you wanted to use menopausal hormone therapy, and someone educated you about the fact that it significantly reduces your risk of osteoporosis and fractures, and this is an FDA-approved indication of menopausal hormone therapy, which is prevention of osteoporosis, you might weigh that, in your decision-making. So if you wait and you get that test when you're 65 and you find out you have osteoporosis, you can't go back in time to when you were 50 or 52 and deciding whether or not to be on hormone therapy, that you've lost that bone density. So I actually think it could be a critical piece of information to help women and doctors with shared decision-making as to whether or not they want to incorporate menopausal hormone therapy as part of their prevention plan for osteoporosis.
Well, you mentioned something earlier that you can't cure it after a certain point, but you can make improvements and manage arthritis or bone density issues. What kind of things can you do after a certain point, if you have maybe neglected some of this area of your health, to turn the ship around a little bit? What's our best way?
There are ways to improve your bone density. I don't ever want anyone to feel like it's too late. It's never too late to start working on it. So we know that programs that include strength training, high resistance strength training, have been shown with 6 to 8 month interventions to increase bone density, particularly in the lumbar spine, by a few percentage points. And if you remember, the typical course that we experience is to lose 1% per year. So even if you're not losing, you are winning the battle because you're not, dropping a percentage point per year. But if you gain a few percentage points, that's a really big deal. There are also studies looking at some impact training. So if you do a little jumping, maybe just 30 jumps a few days a week, it could be jumping jacks, jumping rope, just 30 jumps, not a whole lot. That has been shown to increase bone density of the femoral neck by 1%. And again, if you're gaining 1% and not losing 1%, that's pretty good. So we can always be proactive with exercise for sure. Now, when you think about what medications do, something like a bisphosphonate, which is the typical, type of medication that helps stop bone resorption, the studies on those follow women for a few years, and you will see roughly a 6% improvement in bone density. Mm-hmm. So, it's a big deal if an exercise program can give you a few percent. And these medications can give you 6%. And if you're someone that has really significant osteoporosis, probably the best thing is to combine these things. Do what you can do with exercise, utilize those medications. If hormone therapy is an option for you, do that too. There's basically a whole set of tools you can use, and it's never too late to start using exercise as a tool.
A few years ago, I had read an article about how balance and proprioception was so important. And so that they suggested when you're brushing your teeth to stand on one leg for half of it and stand on the other leg for the other one. So I do that as kind of just this little joke with myself, but I'm trying to put in more things like that. Like I'm doing squats when something's in the microwave or, now I'm going to do some hops now that you tell me that the hops can be helpful.
You should,
but
yes.
let's talk
do
about
a squat jump. So you squat right. And ooh. Jump and get growth.
Yeah. See, double bonus.
Yeah, one of my favorite exercises. I'm totally in favor of not blocking off exercise in one block of the day and then, patting yourself on the back. I think it is great to take a minute here, a minute there, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I talk about this all the time. If you're stirring a pot, sure, stand on one leg. If you're brushing your teeth, you can do a tree pose. My kids think I'm a little crazy. I do squats all the time in between, tossing something around that I'm sauteing. I think it's great to build exercise snacks into your day. And we know it helps to reduce your blood glucose levels as well. Helps with stability of that. Yeah, there are so many things that you can do that are not hard to incorporate. And as you mentioned, balance training and a little bit of agility, like, some sort of fast movements with your feet so you don't trip and fall. are good things to add on to a strength training program, as is flexibility. There's some data that shows that, you know, stretching programs can help you with your mobility and walking speed and things like that. I think you have to think of all those components: stretching, agility, balance, strength. Those all add up.
And it seems like you have very specific suggestions in the book of exercises, or is it a whole plan that you suggest, or targeted exercises? Are there certain parts of the body that especially benefit when you're exercising to maintain your bone and joint health?
Well, for the strength training, it is helpful to utilize some of your large muscle groups. Some of the typical core I don't mean to say core, actually, because core refers to your core. You know, we do want you to do core exercises for balance. But when we think about muscle building exercises that improve bone density, think about squats, deadlifts, and overhead press. Those are good examples of exercises that use large muscle groups. And then, you know, we talked about jumping. Interestingly, jumping seems to more help your hip density, whereas all that strength training, we see a bigger impact on your spine, which is another area that people get, you know, fractures as they age, of course.
Let's talk a little bit about inflammatory foods. You know, at some point I heard like spinach is inflammatory, and you just say, well, wait a minute. Isn't there like a dirty dozen of the most inflammatory foods that we really need to avoid?
So spinach isn't an anti-inflammatory food, but in the complete bone and joint health plan, we do explain that spinach is not a good source of calcium. Spinach has many anti-inflammatory, you know, what we call phytochemicals in it, you know, antioxidants, but it does have oxalates. Your own body makes oxalates, but the problem with oxalates is that oxalates block calcium absorption. So you don't actually get a lot of calcium from spinach. And we discussed this, that this is part of like not seeing things in a silo. Like, you need to think about how do foods benefit your bone and joint health. I'm not saying don't eat spinach, but don't use it as your source of calcium, or maybe combine it with your other source of calcium, because then you're going to get less of that calcium. And so we really wanted to educate people about, you know, the nature of certain foods, that some of them are great for your joints, but they're not going to give you what your bones need. And so we try to blend that all together, actually, in our recipe section.
Okay. I just had this conversation yesterday with a friend. We were talking about how, you know, we've tried all the healthy nut butters, you know, the cashew and the almond butter. And when it comes right down to it, we just love peanut butter and we're never going to give it up. But I even said, I don't care if it's inflammatory.
So I like peanut butter too. I think, you know, look for the less processed ones. Processed foods do tend to be more inflammatory. I love actually fresh ground peanut butter. I think it's great. I put it in smoothies and stuff too. But yeah, when you think about what's inflammatory, you know, processed foods, red meat, certainly we recommend, you know, lean proteins. There are so many foods that are strongly anti-inflammatory. It's so important to incorporate fiber, and so important to incorporate a lot of fruit and vegetables, a lot of variety. You get so many, there are a ton, we have in the book an entire table of phytochemicals that are anti-inflammatory in so many different ways. Cruciferous vegetables are, as an entire group, are amazing. Alliums are a great group of things to include. We go into all the science of anti-inflammatory spices throughout the book. I think you just have to try to remove inflammatory components and think about ways to incorporate anti-inflammatory components. And again, we try to blend that into the recipe section with explanations.
I'm a big cook at home and cook most of our meals. And I was intrigued by the part about spices. I've heard like cinnamon can be good for you. I've heard things like oregano can have good health benefits. Are there other spices that that are particularly good for this kind of health?
Yeah, cinnamon is one of my favorites to recommend to people because it's anti-inflammatory, but also has a glucose stabilizing effect. One of my favorite spices to highlight for people is turmeric, which has a component within it called curcumin. And you'll probably see that in pharmacies. This is really helpful for joint pain. There's a lot of research on curcumin supplements. And turmeric isn't, you know, purely made of curcumin, but it has a lot of curcumin in it. So if you're kind of looking to not take a supplement, but, you know, use something that's anti-inflammatory and incorporate it in your food, like turmeric is a really easy one. You can cook with it. You can put it in lattes. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do. And we definitely blend an entire list of anti-inflammatory spices, again, throughout the recipe section in the complete bone and joint health plan.
Let me just quickly ask you this. I've heard that in order for curcumin to do its anti-inflammatory work, that it has to be combined with bioparin. Do you find that that is true, or something like a pepper? There's some kind of pepper component that helps it work better?
Yeah. Piperine does, which is essentially a component of black pepper, does increase the absorption of curcumin. So, and yeah, we talk about that too in the book. So great pickup.
Just, you never know how much these things, they're just kind of hyping it up to make you buy this supplement or this supplement. So I was
curious. It's exactly true. That's a real thing. I can't bring myself to put a pepper in a latte, but I do combine turmeric with black pepper in food.
Well, Dr. Jocelyn Wittstein is our guest, and her book, she's co-written along with dietitian Sydney Nitzkorski, is The Complete Bone and Joint Health Plan. It's helping to prevent and treat osteoporosis and arthritis. It's for everyone. And wow, Dr. Jocelyn, thank you so much for writing this book. I think it's one we all need on our bookshelf. So thank you for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And I hope you have all the answers you need the next time you need to see an orthopedist.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
Well, our little mountain community has a lot of residents who make their life goal to achieve an elite level of athletic performance. But as we know, the mental game can be as difficult to conquer as the physical one. Well, our next guest knows all about this. Jim Murphy was a professional baseball player in the Chicago Cubs organization. He describes his journey as one in which his sense of worth and identity always revolved around his performance. He felt fear of failure and that pressure to perform. Since then, Jim Murphy has coached professional and Olympic athletes and has helped them transform their careers through empowering their inner excellence, which is the name of his best-selling book. He joins us this morning. Jim Murphy, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks for having me.
Excited to have you. This book, I read that before this year's Super Bowl, a camera caught Eagles, AJ Brown reading your book, Inner Excellence, on the sidelines. And then it just blew up. But before that, it was a best-selling book. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, when something like that goes viral, wow.
It was pretty amazing. Yeah, it was actually a very interesting story. I was in downtown Dallas on January 12th. So the evening was the Packers playing the Eagles in the wild card game. Sunday night football, the only game on, playoffs, big game, national TV, of course. Well, a couple hours later on that Sunday afternoon, I'm sitting in my hotel room, and I look at my phone. I'm actually watching a different football game, and I'm watching, look at my phone, and I see all these texts. And actually, I thought my mom had died because of all these texts. And then I go, oh, you know, it says, take a look at this Packers game and Eagles game. And so then I was like, wow. So yeah, my life really changed on January 12th.
Wow, that's quite a story. So it's been a while, I suppose, since you were a professional baseball player, but you, in your journey, you learned, as all athletes do, that it's as much about the head game as it is the actual physical game. This is something, as I said in the intro, we know a lot about in this community. So it's all about getting your head in the right place. And you went on to be a coach. Did you coach people on the mental game, the head game, or just overall performance?
Well, so I teach mental skills to pro athletes and executives. I lead retreats all over the world, inner excellence retreats. And so what happened was my baseball career ended by injury, and I was devastated. Jim Murphy, pro baseball player, becomes Jim Murphy nobody in my mind. And I felt I was so lost and didn't know what to do with my life. I decided to leave for the desert, give away over half my possessions, including my TV, to live a life of solitude, to figure out what to do. When I was in the desert, I decided to become a personal coach to pro baseball players and teach them how to have peace and confidence under pressure. and my first two athletes did amazing. So I decided to put together a little manual on how to do this for future clients. So I call up a sports psychologist and I say, how can an Olympic athlete train for 4 years for an event that may last less than a minute and have peace and confidence with so much out of their control? And as you know, like today in America, there's so much out of our control. It can be very scary. And so that was my question. And then similarly, I asked them, how can a Major League Baseball player in Game 7 of the World Series with the bases loaded, bottom of the ninth, two outs, full count, down by one, how can that guy have peace and confidence? And it just brought more questions than answers. So I called another psychologist and another, and I spent 5 years full-time writing and researching that question. And that became the book, Inner Excellence.
It really is. Your personal journey is so interesting, how you've taken actions and had these dips in your life, but they seem to lead to really great things on the other side. What do you tell the people that you coach when they're in a real dip to have faith through it?
Well, I think one thing that's crucial to know is that the best possible life has one foot in joy and one foot in suffering. And it's definitely not how I would have drawn up the universe if I was God. I would have went for the old one foot in joy, one foot in joy technique. But since I'm not God, I didn't create it that way. And this is just how the universe is. If you want to build muscle, you got to break the muscle down. There's no other way. If you want to gain wisdom, you have to go through things. If you want to gain inner strength, you have to face adversity. There's just no other way. And so along with that is, so that's a very basic understanding. Principle number one of inner excellence is that everything is here to teach me and help me. It's all working for my good. And so that's something that we think about every single day, as well as you don't know what's best for you. You have your goals and your desires, but are they always best for you? I mean, look back on your life. Has everything you've always wanted been the best for you? Your five-year-old self, you know, just wants to keep eating cookies for all day. Is that the best for you? And when you turned 10, all of a sudden, did you, everything you wanted was best for you? We're still like that. You know, my desire is still not always what, I don't know what's best for me. And so it's important to know that these goals that you have, hold them loosely. The more important thing is to grow in inner strength than to get what you want.
Yeah. It seems like those failures or disappointments that we have seem to certainly teach us more than our victories. It's you end up thinking so much more about the challenges that you have. And I think, I don't know if it was Oprah or someone, you know, that's well-respected, said, it's not what happened to you, it's what happened for you. You know, if we can look back at the stuff that was really tough for us, that's the stuff that makes those big changes in our lives, right? Let's talk about how you identify or how you can help clients identify where their issue might be. Is it an issue of technique or talent or physicality, or is it mental, spiritual, whatever? How do you help them hone in on what their issues are about?
Well, whenever I start with a client, we always start with how they want to feel in their life and how they don't want to feel. I call it WTF and DW2F. TF, want to feel, don't want to feel. and so we don't want to be led around by our feelings, but we do want to recognize that when we're at our best, it could be being a radio show host or a YouTuber or a school teacher, pro athlete. It doesn't matter. When you're at your best, you feel a certain way. Your energy, your flow, your resonance has a certain feeling to it. We want to recognize that feeling and develop habits and routines of thought and action, getting into that feeling more often. And so, and understanding that, we all have a deep need to be loved, and it's our greatest desire is to be fully known and fully loved. And so most people spend most of their time, it doesn't matter if you're a pro athlete, CEO, or anybody, most people spend most of their time trying to get that recognition, that status, those achievements, so they can feel loved, so they can feel okay about themselves, so they can feel good enough. And so understanding that is so crucial, and understanding we all have an ego that's always comparing, always threatened, and never satisfied. And mastering the ego is really self-mastery, which is kind of what inner excellence is really about mastering the ego.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're speaking with Jim Murphy. He is the author of the best-selling book, Inner Excellence. It's all about how to train your mind for extraordinary performance. Jim, I'm just wondering, you know, a lot of people will attempt athletic endeavors. And I would say I'm one of these people. I'll do something hard athletically so that I can try to have my mind kind of control my body. And then if I make it to the end of something, say like a century bike ride or something, I feel like, oh, okay, I did that. I can transfer that feeling I had and that effort that I made into my everyday life and make it work. You know, it's like a metaphor. These difficult things we do athletically is like a metaphor for, you know, how we might conduct our own lives. And I'm just wondering how, you know, if you work with athletes, but then you work with just regular people as well, how you kind of make, what is your metaphor connection that's, you know, similar to that?
Well, it's, I don't teach people how to play their sport. So it doesn't matter if you're an athlete or a school teacher or a janitor. It doesn't matter what you do. It's just that people in the pro athlete demographic, I was an athlete. It's just kind of what I enjoy the most. But it doesn't matter what you do, because basically we all have the same desires and all the same problems. It's very, very similar. I mean, you can think about you two. Tell me which of this that you would not like to have. To have a meaningful, fulfilling life with amazing experiences and deep, enriching relationships where you're learning and growing and making a difference, living a fully engaged life, heart, mind, and body, unattached to the results and the ups and downs of life. Is that, would that be close to what you want?
That'd be pretty darn good.
I think most people want something close to that. And we all have an ego that's always threatened, always comparing, never satisfied. We all have limiting beliefs and negative thoughts, judgmental thoughts, a mind that has too many thoughts and too many concerns, a self-conscious mind that the ego exploits, knowing your need for love, that it says, hey, this person is better than you, or you, if you got more achievements or looks or money or status or possessions, you'd get that love that you really want.
Mm. Well, the ego really plays into it a lot here. How do you check yourself on your ego? I think a lot of people who have a lot of ego, we know those. It's much easier to identify from the outside than the inside. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that the biggest challenge that I face is my own self-centeredness. It's the biggest challenge I face in performance and in life. And, you know, the ego is kind of the root of that. Because self-centeredness leads to fear. And when I say self-centeredness, I'm not saying selfishly not sharing my stuff. I'm saying constantly thinking about myself and everything from my point of view is the root of all of our challenges, because it leads to self-protection and fear. And so if you want to live an extraordinary life or just have a great day, remembering that selfless is fearless is crucial, and that unconditional love is the root of that.
Fear is... seems to be a huge limiting belief for many people. Is there a strategy that you found really helps people break through their fears?
Yes. So one of the disciplines of inner excellence is to embrace the tension. And so you can imagine, like we just had the Masters recently and in golf, and there's a lot of tension, like as you're coming down the back nine on Sunday and like Rory had never won the Masters and, you know, kept trying. And so it can be a lot of tension, but in many ways, the average person has more pressure and harder than a pro athlete, because they don't have off seasons and don't have coaches and don't get massages and don't have people like me helping them focus. And so learning to embrace the tension is huge. And so what I mean by this discipline is, everyone that's listening to this, when you wake up in the morning, you have your hopes and plans and goals for the day. Like, I want to achieve this, and I hope this happens, and I hope this doesn't happen. And inevitably, most days, we're going to run into things that we don't expect and don't want. It's a very common thing, right? The unexpected, unwanted. And so the level of anxiety is directly correlated to your attachment to what you think you need to have, and as well as your ability to embrace the unknown and the tension. And so I'll give you an example. So I had a pro athlete who had a mental block, and it was a very simple mental block that the three of us could do physically. And so, and that's how mental blocks work. They're not, mental blocks don't come from, like I mentioned in the book, Inner Excellence, a field goal kicker kicking a really long 55-yard field goal. Not too many kickers are going to get mental blocks on those. They're going to get mental blocks on the short, easy ones, the extra points. And so I had these two pro athletes that had this mental block of just throwing a baseball very, very short distance that the three of us could do. And so what I had them do is, one, we're going to, when you have a fear, like it was becoming an obsession, like, I hope this doesn't happen. I hope I don't get that feeling and that fear, and I hope I don't screw it up. Like, we all have some sort of things like this, right? So first of all, are you willing to face your fears? That's a really important question to ask. Most people are not. And so are you willing to face your fears? And are you willing to have any feeling? Is another very important question. Are you willing to face and have any feeling? And are you also willing to face and have any feeling and let it stay with you all day? Because what people don't know how to face their fears and deal with anxiety and all that unknown. And I'm telling you, this path here is really powerful. Simple path. Ask yourself today when you wake up or when you have a lot out of your control, am I willing to face my fears? Am I willing to face any feeling? Am I willing to sit with it? And if that feeling comes that I don't want, am I willing to stay with it and see it as my teacher and not my enemy? And because likely it's there to teach you and help you. It's for you, not against you.
Yeah, there's a big difference between obsessing over your fears and facing them, isn't there? And the mental space that they take up. It seems like there's a quality of Zen Buddhism almost underneath some of your approach. Is there any specific kind of background or thematic things that seem to come up a lot?
Yeah, there definitely is. Zen Buddhism is a lot of people would say that, and rightly so. My mom is full Japanese, and her background, her lineage is samurai, and so, which I wrote about in the book. Wow. And Inner Excellence is based on the Bible. And so I think anytime you have deep truths and wisdom, then, you know, it's you're going to see it in different cultures in various ways. And so I think inner peace is such a crucial thing for people to have, and so elusive in today with so much out of our control. And so if you want more inner peace, gratitude is really crucial, because gratitude is directly linked to inner peace. Inner peace is directly linked to inner strength.
That's really nice. Jim, I'm wondering if you could go into, you know, we talk about fear and then we talk about anxiety. And to a certain degree, if you can harness your fear, but also harnessing your anxiety in a way that kind of gives us, there's something about anxiety that can give us motivation, but it can also hold us back to a huge degree. Can you talk a little bit about how to morph that anxiety into something that becomes a powerful mental habit?
Yeah, for sure. There's two things. One is never call it my anxiety. And so anyone that's listening, for the rest of your life, the first thing to do is never own it as if it's a part of you. So don't call it yours. So we would say the anxiety that I had in the past. Even if you've felt anxious your whole life, it's still all past tense. So you would call it past, because as soon as you start saying it, it's present tense. Now we've got an ongoing theme that the subconscious mind is here to protect you and make your beliefs come true, line up your results with your beliefs. And so it doesn't, your subconscious, which runs your life with along with your heart, your spirit, your will, it doesn't care what you believe. It's just trying to get those beliefs to work out so you feel, so there's this homeostasis. And so we really want to be careful with the words we use. And so always talk about, so one of the disciplines of Inner Excellence is to speak the truth about the past to create possibilities in the future. And so we never say anything that we don't want to continue as present tense. And we definitely don't own it and say it's mine if you don't want it. Like an example, have you ever heard someone say, like, my neck is killing me or my back is killing me? That's definitely not a phrase that I would ever use, because your subconscious is listening to everything you think, feel, and say, especially what you feel, and trying to make a belief out of it. And so, I mean, unless you're ready to die.
Mm. That's really good. So this also must be part of what you talk about, training your subconscious mind. We all have these limiting beliefs that we probably aren't even really aware of. They're not really conscious beliefs. When you know, in all the work and all the research you've done, aside from this fear thing and this need for love and acceptance, you know, what are some other beliefs that we can call out that are subconscious that really limit us?
We really want to guard our energy. So this is something that I do with all my pro athletes, is one of your main roles every day is to guard your energy, guard your heart. What I mean by that is if you really want to have a great day or do something great in your life, most people spend the vast majority of their time in judgment. And when I say judgment, I mean laying down a negative verdict about self, circumstances, or others. And when we judge the self, circumstance, or others, creativity is out the window, curiosity is gone, vision is greatly narrowed, wisdom is very low. And so having what I want for both of you and anyone listening is that when you're stopped at a stoplight, when you're standing in line in the grocery store, I want your mind to go to the feeling that anything is possible. That's what we want to get to. That's what's possible for everyone listening, is that when you're in these alone moments, you get the feeling that anything is possible. And so, and you can start to take steps in that direction right away. Like with the gratitude. Gratitude is so crucial. It starts with really being grateful for every little thing that you have, because gratitude is such a powerful energy. And vice versa, negative energy, from especially what you watch. We've got to really be careful what we listen to, what we lay our eyes on, who we spend time with, all those things, especially the phone. It can really transform your imagination in a negative way.
I wrote a book a few years ago about creativity, and the subtitle of it is Energy Management for Artists and Creative Professionals, because I can't agree more with guarding your energy and being really conscious of it, and what kind of things, what people, what situations drain it or make you feel more full. And my approach to that was like trying to protect your ability to get into a state of flow. And is there some kind of state of flow that you seek to help the people you coach reach? And do you have any special ways that you enhance that?
Oh yeah, every single day. I mean, that's what I mean by guarding your energy is the number one thing, and getting into that state where you're completely selfless and therefore fearless, where there's no self-protection. Because we're either walking in love or fear. We're either entitled or grateful, one or the other. And if you're entitled, then you're in fear. If you're grateful, then you're walking in love. And so how do we do that more often and be more grateful? Well, with the gratitude, it's looking for specific moments every day, especially before you go to bed, going through your day, like some religious folks called the prayer of examine. Go through your day from start to finish and look at all the gifts that were given to you, especially specific moments, the smaller the better, because that will be training your subconscious to find gifts and create gratitude, which will lead to inner peace and inner strength. We have 4 daily goals with Inner Excellence. The overall goal every day is to learn and grow. And so you might remember that everything is here to teach you and help you. So it works really well. If everything is here to teach me and help me, and my main goal is to learn, well, bingo. And so 4 daily goals. One is to give the best of what you have each day, and realizing that some days you're not going to have much, and you're just going to give the best of whatever that is. It could be 20%. We're just going to give 100% of that 20. Number 2 is to be present. Being present is more powerful than being confident. In my profession, everybody wants confidence, but even more powerful is to be present. When you're present at the highest level in my world, there's that sense of anything is possible. It's this freedom, this joy, anything is possible. And so number 3 is gratitude. Like I said, gratitude is directly linked to inner peace, and inner peace linked to inner strength linked to mental toughness. They're all linked to beauty. And number 4 is to focus on your routines. So inner excellence is really a series of habits of thought and action throughout the day, all day long. And only what you can control. And 4 is focus on your routines and only what you can control. And you know, today there's anxiety is an epidemic. And it's because, one, focusing on what you can't control and what you're afraid of, and two, not having a clear plan and path and purpose for your life.
Those all sound like such worthy goals, and ones that I just wrote them down because I want to remember to focus on them myself. That place of uncertainty for the things that you can't control, though, that is such a present element for so many people, you know, aging parents or job issues. I don't know. There are lots of things that maybe you can't control. Do you have any suggestions for how to live with that? How to sit with that, those feelings?
Well, in the end, if you're ready to die today, then you can do it. In other words, if you're ready to die, then you're ready to give up every single attachment in your life, right? I mean, you're not going to be attached to your car, your job, you know, anything, if you're ready to die. The farther away from that you are, the more fear there's going to be, because one, you could die today, and everything in between. You could lose your car, you could lose your kids, you could lose your job, you could lose your health, every single thing. And so, and that's what the samurai did, is every day they woke up ready to die. And so, what I did on a much smaller level is I lost my career as a pro athlete, and I was really lost, and I left for the desert, and I wanted to live a life that I was prepared to die for. I just didn't know what that was. I had nothing that I was always passionate about being a superstar athlete. And when I lost it, I felt like I lost everything. And so I went to the desert to live a life of solitude until I could find something that I was willing to live and die for.
It's all in this New York Times number one bestseller, Inner Excellence. It's How to Train Your Mind for Extraordinary Performance and the Best Possible Life. Our guest is Jim Murphy. Jim, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life. These are such great things to take through our day and our life.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life here on KPCW. You can find this episode on kpcw.org under the Shows tab, or on the KPCW app, or wherever you get your podcasts at KPCW The Mountain Life. And if you like today's episode, rate us, subscribe to the show, and share it with your friends.